Kyle, we made it. Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor. I'm joined by Kyle Irving. And as always, we appreciate every one of you who subscribe to the pod and listen wherever you get your podcast. Please share, subscribe, and pass it on to a friend, of course. I say we made it because the NBA playoffs are here to give you guys an update of where we are. We're recording this on Thursday, April 18th. The playoffs open on Saturday, April 20th. So by the time you hear this, game one might already be underway. There's a lot going on in the NBA world. So before we get to the playoff talk, first of all, Kyle, how's it going?
It's going great. I mean, we got the NBA playoffs coming up this weekend. There's no possible way that you can be in a bad mood when that's coming down the pipeline. We've had some solid play-in tournament games to get us underway and give us a taste of what we got. But you know, it's that time of year, and you know that it's that time of year. I saw on my timeline the other day the video of Roundball Rock playing live at like the Red Rock Amphitheater, and I'm like, all right, let's go. It really is that time. It is playoff time. You can already feel it in the air. The games feel a little bit different. The intensity is a little bit different, and I'm very excited to see some of the best teams in the NBA duke it out in a 7-game series.
No, 100%. I feel like one of those other good playoff omens is, you know, if you still have regular cable. I think you and I both are streaming now, but back in those regular cable days, you watch the TNT game, the next day you turn the TV on, Charmed is on or whatever. That's how you know it's playoff time, because you got your TV is always on TNT to close the night after that last game you watch inside the NBA. You turn the TV on and Charmed is there. Now, of course, before the playoffs, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, the biggest story, or one of the biggest stories in the NBA, unfortunately, Raptors two-way forward Jontay Porter has received a lifetime ban from the NBA for the violation of gaming rules. It feels crazy to even say lifetime ban. We talked about it a few weeks ago. There was some suspicious activity regarding some bets on Jontay Porter unders, and there were some suspicious things from Jontay Porter with him leaving games with mysterious injuries. It turns out there was some correlation in these things. Investigations found that Jontay Porter not only was involved in some of these things, he also bet on some games, bet on the Raptors to lose. So some crazy stuff, pretty wild situation, and now he's been given a lifetime ban. Kyle, I know you did a lot to kind of cover the story of what happened and kind of how it devolved to where it is. What can we say about the situation that we haven't said already?
That betting on the Raptors to lose might be the only smart thing that he did in the entire situation.
Yes. It's not what Fred VanVleet meant when he said bet on yourself.
No, it is not. It is definitely not what Fred VanVleet meant when he said bet on yourself. I mean, the report is crazy, right? Like, he was giving insider information to apparently a friend, and the guy just threw $80,000 to win $1.1 million on Jontay Porter player props. $80,000 to win $1.1 million on Jontay Porter player props. How did they think they were going to get away with this? Like, especially with, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, that if you subscribe to it, like, you can get these daily emails in your inbox that tell you, here are the player props that paid out, here are the most bet on players, everything like that. Like, they just thought they could drop 80K on Jontay Porter player props and have his name float to the top and everyone just think like, oh yeah, that's normal. And then on top of that, you left the game early with an illness. Like, at least play out the whole game and don't shoot any threes, or like, don't crash the glass, or like, don't do anything. Like, call for a sub, say you're winded that night. Like, you leave the game with an illness, and that automatically makes it look sketchy as hell when they start, you know, kind of lining up the dates and everything like that. It's, you know, it's tough. It's obviously tough for him, because this is just a bad decision that he made. And lifetime ban, there, you know, you and I talked about it last time around. They were going to make an example of him, but I thought our colleague Steph Noh made a pretty damn good point that the NBA kind of pigeonholed themselves on this one, because if it happens to a higher profile player, well, they set the precedent. And lifetime ban is the precedent. So, you know, you hope that this does set an example and kind of steers anybody who may have been doing something similar for their friends in a different direction. But at the same time, like, if it does happen again, like, now you know this is the penalty.
Yeah. I think that you pointed out how they were caught. And listen, I'm not a shady person at all, but the first thing that came to my mind was they could have been more discreet about this, right? Like, $80,000 to make $1 million. Like, that just feels like you're screaming and asking to be caught. Like, I actually had this conversation with some friends on the side saying, like, I wonder what the limit would have been without it raising any eyebrows? Would it have been, you know, $8,000 or $800? Like, you know, like a certain level that maybe it wouldn't have been a thing that you said, but I feel like ultimately you probably would have been able to tie things together. And I know we talked about this before. The NBA is extremely strict about what NBA players can and cannot wager on. And that includes WNBA, G League, and I think I said before, like the Basketball Africa League, because it's an NBA property as well. So it's crazy that it played out like this. Hopefully it's just a one-off situation, because, you know, you don't want anybody questioning the integrity of the league or the game itself. And, you know, betting is so interweaved now, legalized gambling and gaming is so interweaved in the fabric of what, you know. I said this the other day, I turned on NBA TV to see if they were covering the news, and I see FanDuel's taking up half of the bottom of the screen, literally in the aftermath of it. And it's just, you know, the reality that we live in, and there's rules to it, and there's responsible gaming, this, that, and the third. But it's just wild to, you know, hopefully we can kind of keep things separated to at least as much as they possibly can, just because, again, it's become interweaved and felt like this was something that we didn't want to happen, obviously, but it felt like it was inevitable that something like this happened. But they've made an example of Jontay Porter, and now hopefully we move forward and don't have to deal with anything like this ever again.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, with the way that it is intertwined so in your face across all sports, not just the NBA, NFL, yeah, MLB, yeah, all of it. You know, we've already seen it in the NFL multiple occasions. Calvin Ridley, Kishan Booty, like, you know, those are two guys that were caught in red-handed and having their own DraftKings accounts, FanDuel accounts, betting on themselves, betting on their college teams, like whatever it was. And, you know, I mean, Calvin Ridley missed, what was it, half a season or almost a full season?
It might have been full season.
Might have been a full season, yeah, before he came back last year. So, you know, it was only a matter of time before this happened in the NBA too. And it's kind of interesting that it all kind of went hand in hand at the same time as, and we mentioned this last time, like Shohei Ohtani thing with his interpreter and translator and everything like that. And, like, you know, it just did kind of feel like all of this betting stuff was kind of coming crashing down on these leagues all at once. It was going to happen inevitably, you know, just with how close that these leagues are working with these, you know, gaming companies now, and just how easy the access is to these types of apps and stuff. Like I always say, like, I'm living in Los Angeles. It is not legal in Los Angeles, but I'm from Boston. So when I go back home, like, you can go on the apps and everything like that. And it's, to me, it's crazy how easy it is. Like it's more like an iPhone game where you're not playing with real money than it is like, you know, you feel you're actually risking things. So, like, you know, these guys are probably thinking, oh, it's so easy to give my friend a tip here, my friend a tip there. Yeah, probably not going to get 5.5 boards tonight because I'm not in the game plan. I'm not going to play that much, or, you know, I'm not going to shoot any threes because I haven't been shooting, whatever it is. Like, you know, it was inevitable that it was going to happen. So, you know, again, you kind of just hope that with the way that Adam Silver kind of, you know, swung the sword as hard as he did this time around, that it'll scare anybody else away from, you know, kind of ruining the purity of the game.
Yeah, last point I was going to say, it is wild. You have a sports book in your pocket. Like, it's pretty wild. I don't think anybody could have ever imagined that being the reality, but here we are. Now, in other news that's not as happy, but also just a reality of what's going on, the NBA play-in tournament got going this week, and we had two devastating injuries to star players. They aren't like catastrophic injuries, not like season enders, but probably ending their opportunity to compete in the playoffs, starting in that 7-8 play-in game in the Western Conference. Zion Williamson was everything we imagined in his playoff debut, excuse me, postseason debut, and then some, probably even twice as good as we would have expected him to be in his postseason debut. 40 points, 11 boards. Lakers had no answer for him. He gets the game tying bucket. Pelicans are staging his comeback. Smoothie King Center is going crazy. He goes down with a hamstring injury, will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. They lost to the Lakers, so if he can come back, it would be late in the first round of the playoffs. They have to win the last winner go home game against the Kings. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Then in the 7-8 game in the Eastern Conference, Jimmy Butler, we get play in Jimmy. He's stealing the ball, had like 3 or 4 steals in the first quarter, end of the first quarter, goes down with an injury, pump fakes. Kelly Oubre falls on his leg. He plays through it. He hobbles the entire game. Turns out he has a pretty serious MCL injury, and there might be some meniscus damage in there as well. So he's out for a long time as well. I think it's like a 3 or 4 week situation with him as well. So if the Heat make the playoffs, they have to make another run like they did last year. And based on what they did with Tyler Hero, he probably wouldn't play as well. So those just kind of are our two dark clouds over the postseason. But there's a lot going on to be excited about with the postseason. But one, dang, what a performance from Zion. Two, also Jimmy, like, playing through that for 40 minutes he played on an MCL injury. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, the Zion one was one of those where like the injury happens and it's such a good game and the energy was so high in the building, like you said, you can almost feel it through the TV, and he gets the bucket to tie the game. And like, that's kind of a moment where, I mean, that was ridiculous what he was doing. Like I tweeted, like, you literally could have put an actual brick wall in front of the rim, and he was just in one of those modes where he was just blown through it and gotten a layup anyway. It didn't matter that Anthony Davis was down there. He was scoring at the rim at will, really kind of carrying, you know, him and Jose Alvarado. Got to give him a shout out too for the way that he played in that game to, you know, help kind of catalyze that comeback. But you know, it just felt like one of those moments where the injury happens, and even though it's 3 minutes left in a tied game where the winner clinches the number seven seed in the playoffs, like, it was almost tough to focus. It was almost tough to like watch it, because the whole time you're just like, damn, like Zion really should be out there. And like, we finally were seeing him on that stage, and he was doing his thing on that stage the way that he was expected to, you know, when he was dubbed as, you know, the best American prospect since LeBron James when he got drafted and everything like that. And we're watching those two go head to head. So it really kind of took the wind out of that game. You know, and then, you know, Brandon Ingram's on the bench as well. And you're not really sure why, because, you know, he's dealing with that knee injury, and maybe that was flaring up on him a little bit too. So just a lot of question marks to end that one. Lakers end up clinching the number seven seed with a win. And then, yeah, I mean, you talk about that 76ers Heat game. Like, that was one where the Heat had all the momentum. And the two missed free throws, that the bricking for chicken, that really got the Sixers crowd going, that turned everything around. But, you know, the reality is that like Jimmy Butler was probably playing at what, 30%, 40% after that knee injury. And you could see it every time out, like the cameras, like, you know, panning to him, and he's grimacing in pain. And, you know, it didn't take much for, once the 76ers got momentum, to keep momentum and then kind of finish that one off. So now I'm very curious to see what the Heat look like moving forward, because we've learned in the past, every time you count this team out, somebody else steps up and they find a way to get it done. They're going up against a Bulls team that looked really good against that Hawks defense last night. I think you and I could look really good against that Hawks defense, you know, just the way that they don't play any defense. So it's going to be a lot tougher of a challenge, even without Jimmy Butler in the lineup. But at the same time, like, you know, this is where Tyler Harrow has to step up. This is where I think he is the single most important player in that playing game, because, you know, he had 25 points on 27 shots against 76ers. That is horrendous. He was really bad for three straight quarters. And then, you know, he was really bad for three straight quarters. And then he finally found his rhythm in the fourth quarter and hit some big shots to kind of keep them in that game. But, you know, with Jimmy Butler out, like, how long have we been talking about the Heat's issues in the half court offensively? Yep. Like, they need to find somebody else to step up and generate half court offense. Terry Rozier already ruled out for that game as well. So, you know, that kind of that hurts that same weakness that they've had for a while. You know, Bam Adebayo is going to bring it on the defensive end and do everything he can to try and help the Heat win that game. But the reality is, he's not someone you can just give the ball to and have him go get 30 in the half court. Like, they're going to have to find somebody else that can score at will the way that Jimmy does. It's going to have to be Tyler Harrow, in my opinion. And then someone else is going to have to step up as well, because, you know, as the Bulls showed the other night, they have several guys that can go and get a bucket, whether it's DeMar DeRozan. Kobe White had 42 points, 6 assists, 0 turnovers. He was absolutely incredible. He was one of my shout outs on this pod earlier this year for just how well he was playing, in a true most improved player of the year candidate for me. So, you know, it's going to be a tough series for the Heat, but like I said, every time we kind of count this team out, they find a way to get it done.
So I guess since we're talking about that last winner take all game between the Bulls and the Heat, who do you think gives the Celtics a harder time, Chicago or Miami?
Honestly, it still feels like Miami, like, just because that's the way that things go. You know, I feel like the Celtics match up pretty well against the Bulls, because, you know, you got Nikola Vucevic, who's going to have to now like kind of go out onto the perimeter and guard Kristaps Porzingis. They have the wings and the length and the size to disrupt scorers like Kobe White, disrupt scorers like DeMar DeRozan. You know, I just feel like they, confidence wise, would go into that series fully expecting to take care of business there, where the Heat, same thing. You know, I mean, without Jimmy Butler, that's a completely different team, but just the way that the Heat and the Celtics have battled in the playoffs the last couple of years, it wouldn't surprise me that even if, you know, Terry Rozier, for example, were able to get healthy with that neck injury come the first round of the playoffs, well, then that kind of helps, you know, massage a little bit of those issues that they have in the half court. So, you know, I still think the Heat give the Celtics a tougher first round matchup if they were to advance and beat the Bulls. But to be honest with you, like, I don't know if you feel the same way. I kind of think the Bulls might win that game.
I agree. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I think the Bulls get it done, just because it's the hospital Heat at this point. You know, no Rozier, no Jimmy. They just don't really have much left. I will say the last thing is a revenge narrative either way. Terry Rozier's revenge or Javonte Green's revenge. Regardless, we'll see who goes against their former team in Boston. Now, we talked a little bit about the play-in. We know 6 of 8 series, and we talked about one last week that we knew pretty much way before the season was over, and that was LA and Dallas. I think we both had the Mavs winning that series in seven games, and Kawhi's status is still kind of uncertain going into the series, so doesn't give me much confidence and definitely doesn't change my mind. But the play-in tournament did set us up with a few matchups that are really intriguing. So we'll start in the Western Conference, a rematch of last year's conference finals. This time, two rounds earlier, 7-seed Lakers and the 2-seed Nuggets. Nuggets have won, I think, 8 straight games, including last year's postseason against this Lakers team. Will we see more of the same? Do the Lakers have a chance to win this series at all?
I think they have a chance. But I also, in saying that, would probably take the Nuggets to win the series. This is going to be like kind of a contradicting take. I'm going to take the Nuggets to win the series in 5 games, but I genuinely feel like if the Lakers or if anybody like really has an opportunity to knock off the Nuggets, like the Lakers have as good of a shot as anybody. Even though Denver has had their number, I just think with LeBron and with AD, that is just a level of confidence that like they are going to believe in themselves to be able to overcome that, even though they've lost 8 straight games against Denver dating back to last regular season. The Nuggets took care of business on opening night this year. They took care of business on the Kobe Bryant statue reveal, and they took care of business on the night that LeBron scored 40,000 points. So like Denver just continues to beat up on the Lakers, even on their most important nights, swept them in the conference finals last year too. I feel like the Lakers could make a sneaky run if they can get past Denver, but getting past Denver is no easy task. Yeah. And obviously the spotlight is on Anthony Davis, whether they decide to, you know, try and mess around defensively the way they did last year with Rui Hachimura guarding Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis playing, you know, some help side defense there, or just stick AD on him outright to try and disrupt Jokic. You know, it's going to come down to, can AD match the MVP level play that you know you're going to get out of Nikola Jokic? And then, you know, when you're talking about on the perimeter, like, can they find anybody to disrupt Jamal Murray? And that is the 1-2 punch. That is, you know, but then you have Aaron Gordon lurking, and that's just how the Nuggets beat you. Like, they are one of the most complete teams in the NBA for a reason. That is why I think they will win the series in 5 games. But I do think the Lakers have a chance. Obviously, I'm saying gentlemen sweep. That doesn't give them much of a chance, but I do think they can make a run if they can get past Denver. It's just a tall task to do that.
I got Nuggets in 6, and I think you made great points about what you were saying. It's funny that we talk about narratives, because we always say, like, oh, man, it's hard to beat a team 4 times in a row. It's hard to beat a team 6 times in a row. At what point do we turn around and just say, oh, they got their number, and not say, hey, it's hard to beat a team 9 times in a row? Like, you could easily say that about the Nuggets and the Lakers this time around. I think where the series is going to be won is we know Jokic is going to be the best player on the floor. There's like a 99% chance he'll be the best player on the floor. He'll be the best player on the floor pretty much the entire playoffs. You know, he's the best player in the world. But after that, who's going to be 2 and 3? Can LeBron and AD be 2 and 3 and Jamal Murray be a distant 4? Because last year in the conference finals, Jamal Murray, they had no answer for him. And, you know, now they replaced Dennis Schroeder with Spencer Dinwiddie. They got Gabe Vincent. Maybe they can throw some different types of looks at him defensively and just make him uncomfortable. That's where things will be really important for them. And another thing somebody pointed out, last conference finals, Bruce Brown tore the Lakers up. He torched the Lakers. Now, can Christian Brown replicate that a little bit? They're going to need a lot more Reggie Jackson in this series. So I think some things have changed in the margins. Obviously, up top, things remain the same. Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., those guys. Michael Porter Jr. always has really good games against this Lakers team as well. So I still have the Nuggets winning this series. But like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers, you know, find some things that work that they couldn't employ last year. LeBron is healthier than he was last year. I think there's a benefit in meeting this team 2 rounds earlier and not playing every other night when you're playing in that altitude. So that's definitely a good one. We're pretty much on the same line there. Now, the other one in the Western Conference is another team who has another team's number. The 6-seed Suns swept the Timberwolves 3-0 during the regular season, including the last game of the season where it was a crucial game for both teams, and the Suns were able to get it done. Bradley Beal had a crazy game. He and Ant Edwards got into it a little bit. Big competitors, nothing crazy. And now we get to actually use that meme in real time. They got Kevin Durant. We got Jaden McDaniels. What are your thoughts? Do you think that Minnesota has a chance at all? I feel like a lot of people are saying this is the worst possible matchup that they could have drawn. Who you got in this series, and how will the series be won?
Minnesota definitely has a chance. We'll go ahead and say that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just think defensively, like what they can bring defensively is so much more than anything that the Suns can do defensively.
Yeah.
I think the reason why it's such a tough matchup for the Timberwolves is because obviously the Thunder, or I did just say the Thunder, because the Suns and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal can really light it up offensively, obviously. And if Anthony Edwards doesn't have it going and Karl Anthony Towns isn't at full strength, then, you know, the Timberwolves don't really have the offensive firepower to keep up with the Suns. So, you know, the game is going to be won on the defensive end if it's the Timberwolves. Like, it's going to be sticking with what's got them to this point as the number three seed. They've had the number one defense in the NBA all season long. You know, you made the joke about Jaden McDaniels, but it's like, you know, him, Ant, you know, like Rudy Gobert, obviously defense player of the year. Like, they had Mike Conley getting it done up top, guarding Devin Booker or Bradley Beal or wherever they decide to place him. Nikhil Alexander Walker, you go on and on down the list of players that make a high level impact defensively for them. And it's going to come down to them trying to make the Suns play their brand of basketball versus them trying to, you know, push the pace and play the way that the Suns want to play. And that's not easy to do because, you know, the Suns are the team that has the more playoff experience, like across the board. Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant have more playoff experience than the guys in Minnesota do. And you expect them to try and pick up the pace, and they're going to be, you know, flinging threes, and they're going to be, you know, running isolations and doing all these different things to try and, you know, take Minnesota out of their game. But if the Timberwolves can really slow things down, and Anthony Edwards can be the player that he has been all year, and they can, you know, hold the Suns within the realm of, you know, under 120 points, 115 points, keep them as close to 100, as close to the century mark as possible, then I think this series does favor the Timberwolves. But, you know, I mean, it's Kevin Durant, it's Devin Booker, it's Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
That's a lot of guys you got to stop. You know, I don't want to leave Grayson Allen out either, who just got the bag and he's been shooting out of his mind this season. Like, you know, they have weapons on offense. It's just, you know, can the Timberwolves offensively keep up with the Suns enough to kind of maintain what they're going to get done on the defensive end?
This is one of those series where I think you throw out what happened in the regular season. I'm again with you on this. I have Minnesota in seven games. I think, you know, one thing that we've talked about with the Suns, they're so top heavy. Grayson Allen has stepped up and played really good basketball, hit big shots and things of that nature. But I think that Minnesota has a little bit of a depth advantage. You know, we talk about the second tier guys, but, you know, the reserves that they've had, you know, Nikhil Alexander Walker has played great basketball. Naz Reid has played great basketball for them this year. So, you know, the fact they can go to their bench and have guys that contribute as well, it's going to be opportunity for that team to grow up. They've been in the playoffs a couple times this past few years. They haven't gotten out of the first round. So they have some experience, but now this is the one where you really have to, you know, grow up in real time and slay a giant in a sense, even though they're, you know, the sixth seed, but they have guys who have been to the finals, guys who have won finals and finals MVP, specifically Kevin Durant. So I'm interested in that one. It's going to be one that I think there's a lot of narratives with that series, and I'm definitely locked into that one. I think it goes the distance. I actually feel like all the series that we know of right now are going to go six or seven games. I don't know if I'm thinking, you know, too far ahead as far as that goes, but we can swing things over to the Eastern Conference real quick for a break. And we'll start with the 2-7 series, because it's not very often that you see the 7 seed favored by some people to get out of the first round. I think that's a little disrespectful to the Knicks and what they've accomplished. And I'm talking about the Knicks 76ers series. I got New York in 6. I think Jalen Brunson is too much for Philadelphia. He's probably going to feel comfortable in the Wells Fargo Center. And Joel Embiid is pretty hobbled. We saw that during the play-in tournament. I think you're probably on the same page with me, but I'm not sure on how you're feeling about that series and the length that it goes.
I actually agree. I think Knicks in 6. That's kind of what I had in my mind. And it's crazy to me that the 76ers, you know, according to Vegas, are actually favored in this series. Like, That is wild to me. But, you know, I really do think that the way the Knicks have played and the way they've come together as a team since Julius Randle went out, like, that is a really dangerous squad that I feel like people aren't really talking about as, in my opinion, probably the team that has the best chance of knocking off the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, especially with the way that Giannis is hampered right now with that calf injury. Jalen Brunson is playing at an MVP caliber level. Like, he is, you said it yourself, he's comfortable at the Wells Fargo Center. I've already seen stuff on my Twitter timeline that he's hung more banners at the Wells Fargo Center than Joel Embiid has. And, you know, there's a lot of guys on that team that are comfortable playing in that arena with Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo as well. And, you know, OG Anunoby, and then they can throw the front court duo of Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson at Joel Embiid to try and disrupt him. And, you know, Embiid has been solid since he's come back, but last night was the first time we've seen him play in a playoff type atmosphere. And I really feel like he just looked gassed. Like he just looked like he had, you know, the knee is one thing. It didn't look like he was hobbling, or it didn't look like he was limping or anything like that, moving slower than usual or anything. But like every single time there was a stoppage in play, it was hands on his knees. He's, you know, huffing and puffing. And it feels like it's going to take a little bit for him to get into that postseason shape. And I don't know if he has enough time. I don't know if the Sixers are going to have enough time to afford the time that he needs to get into that shape. It would not surprise me, and this is just, you know, nothing behind this. This is just going out on a limb. It would not surprise me if Joel Embiid does not play in every single game of that series. Like, it just feels like one of those things where he is eventually going to need a night off. And it happened in the series against the Celtics last year as well. Like, there are just times where his body just kind of breaks down on him. He needs one game off to give him the extra day's rest and then get back for, you know, what might be a more important game. And against a team as good as the Knicks, as good as they're playing on both ends of the floor, defensively and offensively, the way that they're relying on Jalen Brunson on offense, guys like Dante DiVincenzo have been stepping up on the offensive end. Josh Hart's doing the dirty work. OG's doing the dirty work. They've had different guys stepping up on both ends of the floor. I just don't think that the 76ers, at this point with Joel Embiid at the stage that he is right now, trying to come back from this injury, have what it takes to beat that next team. I really don't.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's pretty wild that Paul Reed came out on record saying we thought this is the easiest opponent that we could have. That I think he's going to come to regret those words. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those series that ends up being a gentleman's sweep. I'm not predicting that, but I really would not be surprised at all, especially with how rough things looked for 76ers during that play-in tournament game before Nick Batum showed why he was in during the fourth quarter and saved the day for the 76ers. We'll take a quick break. There are two more series to talk about, one especially intriguing in the Eastern Conference, and then we'll do another spin around the league with some other things going on in the basketball world. All right, so a few more series that we have yet to discuss, and one that stands out in the Eastern Conference, 3-6, Milwaukee Bucks stumble across the finish line and earn a date with the Indiana Pacers. These two teams met five times because of the in-season tournament, and the Pacers won four of them. And there's some smoke. There was the game ball controversy. We had Tyrese Halliburton doing the Dame time during the in-season tournament. Giannis's status for the series is up in the air. Doesn't look like he's going to be available for probably games one or game two. It's deja vu for Milwaukee. Indiana's only gotten better since they beat Milwaukee, by the way. They added Pascal Siakam, and you could argue Milwaukee got worse through some things they did, maybe coaching changes, this, that, and the third. No shade. But do you think, like, is Milwaukee going to get it done? I feel like you're still believing in Dame here.
I was still believing in Dame, but that was before we got the most vague injury update that I've ever heard. Like, it was like the wording of that Woj tweet was like, he might not be ready, or he not expected to be ready for the start of the series, but like there's a chance he could come back at the end of the series. And I'm just like, well, what did this even tell us? Like, all this tells us is that we don't know anything about when he's going to be available. And if Giannis has to miss, like, okay, the thing is, like, all right, they're already expecting him to miss probably games one and game two of the series. Right. If he has to miss beyond that, that might be enough for the Pacers to take care of business. So originally I had taken the Bucks to win the series in six games, even with, you know, the questions surrounding Giannis, assuming that he might miss game one and game two. I thought that Damian Lillard would be able to hold it down, and Bobby Portis has played well in Giannis's place all year long. I think their defense matches up pretty well with what the Pacers want to try and do offensively. But you know, the more that we're, or I guess the less that we're finding out about this Giannis calf injury, the less likely I am to pick Milwaukee. So I'm actually kind of changing up here. And I honestly think the Pacers get it done. It might still be six games, seven games. I would go six if Giannis doesn't play in the series, seven if Giannis does play in the series. Because even if he is there, calf injuries are just so tricky. And we saw what he looked like trying to play through that back injury last year. Obviously, it's two different injuries, but like they're both tricky in different ways. And I really just, you know, if Giannis is not able to suit up for the Bucks, like you said, they already weren't looking good as it is. Now you take out their all-world caliber player, on their best player on both ends of the floor. And, you know, that Pacers team is a lot tougher to beat because they want to play fast. They want to run. And they're going to be able to do that without Giannis in the lineup. Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam, like, that's a tough 1-2 punch to try and stop. And I'm starting to lean more towards the Pacers, even though I originally had said Bucks in six.
No, I'm with you. I have Pacers in seven written down here. I think that does depend on everything. It would be pretty cold. Tyrese Haliburton, local guy from Wisconsin, comes to his hometown and gets a win in game seven for his first playoff series win. And I will say Woj took a page out of Doc Rivers' book because they asked him if he had a Giannis update, and he said, I hate to tell you this, I didn't even ask. So he gave a non-update when he was asked about Giannis's health a few days ago as well. But ultimately, I do think that even if Giannis plays and is limited, one, Cavs are tricky, especially for a guy whose game is so predicated on his athleticism. He put up video game numbers, literally video game numbers against Indiana this year. I think he had a game of 64 and 57 or what have you, 54, 64 last year. And those are different games. Let me make sure I'm not putting two games together. He had multiple 50-plus games against Indiana this past season. But, you know, we mentioned Pascal also having, you know, your guy, Sticks, Jalen Smith. You know, having, you know, Miles Turner, they have guys who can build a wall. And Rick Carlisle is just, you know, a championship coach. Like, that's the perfect coach, you know, for a chess match like this series. So I got Indiana, you know, advancing past this series. And the winner of that one would play the winner of that Knicks 76ers series. One more. A lot of people are disrespecting this series. It's been kind of relegated to the NBA TV series, but their star power. Four seed Cavs, five seed Magic. Basketball gods had their eyes on what Cleveland did because they kind of tanked for the seed. So that's the only reason that's giving me some pause. I have the Cavs winning this series in six games, but the basketball gods are upset with them. Maybe the Magic get it done. But I just think that the growing pains are for the Magic. It's their first time there. Young guy, Paolo Banchero, again, salute to him. Number one overall pick in his second season, leading his team to the fifth seed in the NBA playoffs is no small task. And they got a good team around him. What do you think about this series? I feel like you're going to be locked into this series because this is like a right up your alley. And I feel like real basketball fans, and I'm not saying those who are going to tune away aren't real basketball fans, but this is going to be some real ethical playoff hoops for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you bring up Paolo and the fact that he's a number one seed in his second year that is leading his team to the number five seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, has anybody that's been the number one overall pick been talked about less than like what Paolo's done this year? Like, to me, it's crazy. He is so talented. He is, this is going to sound crazy. Like, he really is like almost like a baby LeBron. Like, the way that he is just so big and can handle the ball and the way he moves, he's powerful, but he's like also athletic and kind of like, he's got a smoothness to his game. His jumper's like a little rugged, but he still makes it. Like, there's a lot of similarities there. And I really feel like this matchup, like you said, it's kind of like a hoop heads matchup because there's a lot of length. There's a lot of versatility. There's a lot like they kind of match up. They're almost like, I don't want to say they're similar stylistic teams because like the Cavs are powered by their two guards that are crazy offensively. And the Magic are the exact opposite. They have like two giant power forwards who basically play point guard and shooting guard. So it's a little different the way that it lines up. But, you know, just this, I'm thinking size and length with guys like Evan Mobley and guys like Jared Allen. And then you're talking about Jonathan Isaac and Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. And then, you know, I'm really excited to watch the Orlando Magic's guards match up with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. I mean, they have Jalen Suggs, they have Markelle Fultz, they have different guys they can throw at those guys as well. So, you know, I think it's going to be it's going to be kind of a chess match for the coaches, switching up matchups, finding out what does and doesn't work. Maybe it's what I'm hoping for because I admittedly really like Paolo and I've loved watching the Magic play this season. I'm going to take the Magic to win in six games. I was just really not impressed with what I saw from the Cavaliers last year in the playoffs. Sure. Like, I would have thought they would have taken care of business against the Knicks in that first round series. And they got out-toughed. They got outworked. They got outplayed. They got out everything. What's the survivor? It's like outwit, outstand. outwit, outstand, outlast. Like, that's exactly what the Knicks did to the Cavs last year. And I'm just curious to see if they can learn from their mistakes. And Donovan Mitchell is the best player in the series. Don't get me wrong. Paolo Banchero is probably pretty close to, you know, I feel like he's getting there. I don't know if it's going to show on this stage this year, but, you know, he's kind of pushing his way into, you know, the top, whatever it is, 20, 25 players in the NBA. But, you know, I expect a lot out of him in this playoff series. And I think that, you know, he almost feels a little bit disrespected by, you know, how little he's been covered this year. And this is his chance to show out on a national stage, even if it is on NBA TV, still on a national stage. So I'm going to roll with the Magic. You know, I'm willing to be wrong on this one if that's how it plays out, but I'm going to take the Magic in six.
We finally disagree on a series.
I know.
Finally, it took us long enough. That's why we saved that one for last. Two things I want to say. I agree with you on the thing, and how fitting is it that he's going to make his playoff debut at the Q Rocket Mortgage Loan, whatever it's called. The same place where LeBron made his playoff debut, Paolo Banchero will make his NBA playoff debut. And you unlocked, not even a core memory, but you unlocked a memory for me. I'm never like a big Survivor fan, but I remember when I was like maybe it's late 90s, early 2000s, the Charlotte Hornets playoff theme was Survivor. So like that's the reason I knew like Outwit, Outlast, because that was the Hornets playoff theme for the NBA playoffs. So very fitting that it comes back up with this. One last one we'll talk about real quick. Injuries stain this matchup, but the play-in tournament in the Western Conference. Sacramento, talk about playoffs, season sweeps. Pelicans 5-0 them because of the in-season tournament last year, and now they will meet in the play-in tournament for a chance for the 8 seed and a date with OKC. Think I know where you're going because I saw your pick. I got a spoiler already, but no Herder, no Monk. Pelicans have no Zion. What say you?
I'm rolling with the Kings. That was inspiring the other night, honestly. Like I thought that Warriors dynasty potentially on the line and you know, Steph, the way that he did them in game 7 on the road last year. Like I really thought the Warriors were going to get it done there, and the Kings were awesome. Keon Ellis was absolutely incredible to me. He was the biggest difference maker in that game. I was really impressed with Keegan Murray, who can shoot the shit out of the ball. He hit 8 threes, poured it in. Like the crowd is going crazy with that Keegan Murray. I feel like that's going to be like ringing in the Warriors' heads for the rest of the offseason. And on top of that too, they still have their 1-2 punch, De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. So even though they have guys out of lineup, they've had other guys that have stepped up. They are a team that I think last year they caught a really tough draw in the first round of the playoffs with that Warriors team. And, you know, they kind of got that monkey off their back in that first round of the play-in tournament. And now they're playing a Pelicans team that fully expected to have a healthy Zion Williamson. And now he's out of the lineup. Again, Brandon Ingram was on the bench in the final 3 minutes of that game against the Lakers the other night. Not really sure what's going on with his knee injury. It's just kind of CJ McCollum. I mean, the guy couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. I felt bad for him almost because he was pressing so much, trying to get a bucket to fall. But, you know, it just felt like the Kings looked so good. And it's not that the Pelicans didn't look good, because they did they had to make that comeback. But, you know, they look good at the end of the game there. But it's like when you're expecting to have Zion Williamson and you're expecting to have Brandon Ingram at full strength, and now you don't have Zion Williamson and you're playing with potentially a hamper Brandon Ingram. Like, that's a lot different than what the Kings are doing with two guys who are, yes, rotation players. Yes, Malik Monk might be sixth man of the year, but like, they've had guys that have stepped in and filled in seamlessly for them. It just kind of feels like momentum is in the favor of the Sacramento Kings, and I expect them to advance.
It would be a huge blow to New Orleans. They were right there, and then if they were to lose these two games, I'm leaning Pelicans. I'm leaning Pelicans because one thing we talked about with Sacramento is their inconsistency. And we saw a great game from them in the 9-10 game, we can see them regress on the road. I think they're going to need other guys to step up. They're going to need Harrison Barnes to step up, because I think Keegan Murray's game doesn't necessarily travel as well yet. He's a young player still, understandable. That will come with time. And I think the Pelicans, Brandon Ingram now knows it's me now. You know, I think there's some issues with, you know, one, I think he's coming back from the injury, but also I think there's still some sharing the spotlight with Zion. Not to say that he can't do it, but I think it's a little bit clearer now who needs to do what needs to be done. And I will say, CJ McCollum, please have a good game, because he made the mistake of letting Jaleel White, who played Urkel in Family Matters, wear his uniform for a Pelicans video shoot. So we will see more memes of CJ McCollum as Urkel if he does not show up in this play-in tournament game. So please, CJ McCollum, for the sake of the memes, at least save him for a few days, because the winner of this game will take on OKC. I think people are looking at OKC as a sweet matchup in the first round. Not so much anymore, especially because of the way these teams are hobbled. I don't think that either of them have much of a chance. Maybe if Zion was healthy, I would have said that they did have a chance, but I don't think either of these teams have much of a chance against OKC. Speaking of OKC, speaking of Shea, it used to be hashtag whole lot of Kobe's. Now it's hashtag countless Converse. He's been the face of Converse basketball for the last few years, and he's now going to be the face of Converse basketball on a larger scale. He is what? The director of creative director of Converse basketball.
Thank you. I was going to say, address him properly.
Creative director of Converse basketball, and his signature shoe is coming in 2025. Much well deserved. Like, you know, I was worried that Converse basketball was going to kind of tail off, but they're doing it big in a major way, and I'm really excited to see what he can do with the brand, because it's going to be more than just shoes. It's lifestyle now. It's clothing. It's a SIG shoe. It's probably going to be awesome to play in. So what are you expecting from Shea's new collab with Converse, or this new partnership with Converse?
Yeah, that announcement got me hyped up today. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Like, it feels like Converse is a good fit for Shea, and Shea's a good fit for mm-hmm. Converse. And then, you know, yep. kind of just handing the keys to him as the creative director of Converse basketball, like, that is the smartest thing you could possibly do. The dude has turned into an absolute fashion icon. And yep. if there's anybody that is going to be able to take a brand that people still respect Converse. I still rock my Chuck Taylors all the time. But like, for you know, a brand that had kind of fallen into the background in basketball for a little bit, now they have someone who is a face of, you know, this whole like league fits era of basketball to kind of come in and have his own signature shoe. I hope they give him everything, like give him an on-court shoe, give him another off-court shoe, because, yeah. you know, they already have the one, the Converse Superstars, I think came in two colorways, but I mean, mm-hmm. you know, let him design another off-court shoe, give him, they're already going to do the apparel thing, but like really like let him just loose on designing this Converse basketball brand and where they want to take it. I would even go as far as to say, as you know, they're not going to call it like shit, like SGA brand or something like that. But like in the same way that like LeBron and Steph Curry can kind of like recruit athletes to their brand, like they should yeah. have Shea doing the exact same thing, you know, kind of identifying the guys that he wants to take onto this Converse basketball team with him. So I'm really excited to see what this partnership turns into. I think it's a perfect fit. I'm really excited about like what the future holds for Converse basketball behind Shea Gildas-Alexander.
No, 100%. I was going to say, you said that. I got three pair of Chucks too. So Converse, come holler at NBA Sound System. We rep your brand well as well. So if you got any new Shea stuff you want us to showcase and review on the pod, holler at us, man. But seriously, Converse, you know, rich history in basketball, right? Like thinking about how they came on the scene. I mean, Converse has been around forever, right? Chucks. We look at anything with the old Celtics. They got on the black Chucks, and every other team in the league wore white Chucks. So, like, that's like the earliest memory of Converse and Converse basketball. But then you go to the 80s, you know, with Magic and Bird, you know, the Converse weapons and the black ones for Bird and the Celtics and the purple and gold ones for Magic. So, you know, to think about what they meant for the league and the two faces of the league back then, and now Shea being this, you know, MVP candidate, maybe should win MVP if you ask Kyle, you know, guy like that and a fashion icon, like you mentioned, was GQ, you know, like most fashionable man, like in 2022. I mean, I think they're, I don't know how extensive their roster is. I know Draymond left Converse and went back to Nike, which they're same family, but I know it's Shea. And I know Kelly Oubre, another stylish guy, another style icon, wears Converse basketball products. So, you know, I think that lane that they decided to take and taking people who their style and their influence transcends sport, transcends basketball, I think is a really smart way to go. And I'm super, super, super excited for what that means for him. Again, well-deserved. It's crazy. I don't think I ever would have imagined that, you know, when following the scrawny rookie, you know, for the Clippers, what, 4 or 5 years ago now, and to see him be the creative director of Converse basketball, getting ready to go on his first playoff run as the guy, and they have just really got OKC back on the basketball map. So it's crazy to see.
Yeah, and then I know we were probably going to pivot to this next, but Nike drops an absolute bomb the other day too. And Caitlin Clark is getting her own signature shoe. And I had mentioned it to you. I texted you on the side. I was like, you know, this is something that I had kind of wanted to be bringing up with you for a little bit now, because, you know, it felt inevitable that Caitlin Clark was going to get her own signature shoe, depending on who, you know, it was depending on who she was going to sign with. She already had the NIL deal with Nike. So it felt like that was going to be where she leaned. You know, SGA, he had his sneaker free agency coming up. I was curious to see where he ended up. Jaylen Brown is another one. He's a sneaker free agent. Like, I'm curious to see where he ends up. Could he be a potential Converse guy? I mean, headquarters is in Boston. You know what I mean? Like, that, you know, that could line up as well. As stylish dude, and him and Shea, I could see them clicking there. But, you know, the Caitlin Clark stuff is super interesting to me as well, because obviously there was a lot of backlash that, you know, two-time MVP Asia Wilson hasn't even gotten her own signature shoe yet. I know Jordan Brand, it feels like they are working towards something to work with Asia Wilson on that. And I'm looking forward to see where that comes from, or where that goes as well. But, you know, it's awesome to see that Nike's kind of riding the wave on Caitlin Clark here. And especially considering how successful Sabrina Ionescu's first signature shoe was, to the point that, you know, players at the college level, men's and women's, at the pro level, men's and women's, are all rocking the sneaker. It was, you know, honestly, I think a lot of people consider it to be one of the most successful signature shoes that dropped in 2023. You know, so I'm really curious to see if they, if Nike tries to adopt the same kind of principles for the Caitlin Clark signature shoe, where it's more unisex than it is just for men's or just for women's, you know, because they saw a lot of success with that with Sabrina Ionescu. And I have a feeling they're going to try and replicate that with Caitlin Clark in the way that she is kind of breaking down barriers for just anybody who's trying to watch women's basketball in general.
Yeah, 100%. You stole the thought out of my brain, because two things are true at once. Yes, Asia Wilson absolutely deserves her own 100%. Signature shoe. She has some crazy LeBron 21 P's, I think, that she won the championship in last year. But also, that doesn't make Caitlin Clark any less deserving. What she's done for the game, what she did at the collegiate level, we've seen, you know, it's not preposterous for a rookie to come into the league with their own signature shoe. It doesn't happen often, but we see it. And I think Caitlin Clark rises to that level of player that does that. It's going to feel, it's going to stink not seeing her wearing Bruce Lee Kobe's anymore. I know. Especially because they still match that Indiana Fever uniform. So maybe when her sneaker is in development, she'll still pull out the couple of the Kobe colorways that she played in. But that same thing with Sabrina as well. You know, Sabrina Ionescu was one of the Kobe descendants, disciples, you know, great friends with the Bryant family before his passing. And she kind of carried that torch on the women's side and wore a lot of Kobe sneakers. And there are a lot of elements of Kobe's sneaker and her low top shoe, which makes perfect sense that it's as popular as it is. So I could see something similar happening with Caitlin Clark having a low top sneaker that kind of has that similar vibe. You know, Fever have a nice color scheme, the navy red and gold. You know, I think that'll be something that could make for some flavors, but also, you know, we see now there's no real color rules for sneakers too. So, you know, I think she can get pretty exciting with those colors too. We'll see Iowa PEs, same way we see Oregon PEs with the Sabrinas as well. So, you know, I have no idea what type of silhouette she's going to get, but I would imagine that it'll evoke memories of some Kobe shoes, and it's going to be a hot seller. Thinking about how their tickets are already selling out. I saw earlier today, the Mystics are going to play against Indiana at Capital One Arena, so they can, you know, hold the capacity when the Fever come in town. So, you know, going to be a lot of eyes on Indiana, and they're going to be a lot of eyes on Caitlin Clark's sneakers, which I'm sure she will sell a lot of as soon as we see they get those in production and get those out. Who knows if it'll happen during her rookie year, but we know that it's in the works.
Yeah, one of the first things that came to my mind was I really hope that she, kind of similar like how Devin Booker with his colorways, he's like paying tribute to some like old classic Nikes, Kobe's, you know, like, and not even just basketball sneakers. Like, he was rocking the Forrest Gump.
The Cortez, yeah.
Yeah, the Cortez, yeah. Like, I mean, that's you and I talked about those back and forth. Like, those are one of the toughest colorways that we've seen of those yet. I really hope that Caitlin Clark comes out with a Bruce Lee Kobe's colorway of her own sneaker, just because I tweeted about this as well. Like, when they build that statue of her at Iowa, she's got to be wearing the Bruce Lee Kobe's. Like, those were a staple of her time at Iowa, and they went so well with those jerseys. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, damn, it would have went well with the Indiana Fever jerseys as well, but she's going to get the Bruce Lee Kobe colorway for her own signature sneaker. So I'm actually going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Which one are you more excited? Which one are you looking forward to more? The SGA ones or the, ooh, maybe the CC ones? I don't know. CC ones or SGA ones? I mean, I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand there. Which one are you looking forward to more?
I'm leaning SGA ones. I think, again, I mentioned the whole lot of Kobe's. All he played in was Kobe's when he came into the league. So it's going to be a similar type thing, just a Converse, you know, logo on the side, but it's going to be similar tech. Again, Nike Converse, same family. We've seen Devin Booker collab with Converse, and he has a Nike SIG shoe. So I'm excited about that. I'm actually in the market for some new basketball shoes. So hurry up and get these out so I can go out and wear test them. And again, Converse, Nike, you want to throw us some, Nike too. Throw us some CCs. We'll go hoop in them. Kyle and I hoop at least once a week, so we can tell you, we can come on Sound System and give you great reviews about these sneakers, because I'm sure they're going to perform well. But I'm leaning to the Shea ones, the SGA ones, whatever they decide to call them, because seeing them in those Thunder colors, it kind of brings back that excitement. Same thing we used to get with those KD colorways he used to have when he was in OKC. What about you?
The reason I lean the Shays, the SGA ones, we're coming up with a name on our own here. I don't know which one we're going to rock with, but the reason I lean that side is because I have a feeling that it's going to be similar to what Devin Booker is trying to do, in the sense that like he wanted his signature sneaker to be something that you could wear on or off the court. And I feel like Shea is probably going to take a similar approach. So for guys like us who appreciate basketball shoes, we're basketball sneaker, like we're junkies, but like we also aren't really hooping like that anymore. Like you said, maybe playing once, we're both playing in the men's league, you know, playing once a week, you know, playing pickup down the street and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not really spending like $150 on like the latest LeBrons anymore. You know, I like to have a shoe that has a little bit of versatility. So if it's going to be the SGAs and they're going to be a sneaker that I can rock on and off the court, that's kind of where I'm talking about.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. And we know SGA is going to have the Converse on, barring anything crazy, in Paris when he and Team Canada look to medal for the first time since 1936, I think. But regardless of that, they're back on the Olympic stage for the first time since Sydney in 2000. And we'll wrap on that note because we now know Team USA has been officially named the 12-man roster. I'm looking at a picture of the graphic that they shared, so I'm not reading these names off in any particular order other than the names that they show up. Joel Embiid, Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Tyrese Halliburton, Jason Tatum, the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, and Drew Holiday. First thoughts when you see this roster shoe in, what percent chance is it that they bring home the gold for 5th consecutive time?
I mean, their biggest issue was at the center position, right? Like over these last couple of international tournaments, excluding the Olympics, that they brought home gold. You know, they had struggled to fill that center position, and they got it in Joel Embiid, which I think, you know, it's still, that's one that is going to be like, until he is actually suited up on the court in the Olympics in Paris, like it's going to be hard to believe until you see it, because it almost like doesn't even look right that he's on that roster, because for a long time, you know, he toyed with the idea of potentially playing for Africa. He toyed with the idea of playing for France. Like, you know, he had kind of like, he had never really fully committed to USA. So now it kind of feels like, all right, like he's really going to be the big man in the middle, and that rounds out like the perfect team that Team USA has been looking to put together. It feels like they have to be in line for their 5th consecutive gold medal. I don't know if you feel the same way. I know Canada can put together a really, really talented team. As long as everybody shows up, they can put together a team that can compete with the United States. Australia has a really good team. You can never count out Luka and Slovenia. I mean, if Jokic is going to suit up, then, you know, Serbia is going to have a chance. But with the way that this roster goes, 12 men deep, and the way that they filled their final hole that they needed to fill on the roster, it just feels like it's the super team. It is like, if it's the dream team and the redeem team, like this is, I guess it's a super team. They really are. It's the Avengers, LeBron and Steph and Kawhi. And it's just crazy. It's going to be crazy to watch all these guys playing on the same team.
One thing that stood out to me when I saw the roster announcement, and this is not meant to be disrespect to Drew Holiday or Steph Curry, really, but they aren't like typical point guards. Like, obviously, they play the point guard position. Tyrese Halliburton is a pure point guard. I'm curious to see. We're going to get a lot of point Brian, and we'll probably get some point Book in spots, but they're pretty damn good at what they do. So I'm not at all concerned about that. Obviously, you know, we talked about Joel Embiid's health at the top of the show. So that's something that probably hangs over to, again, kind of similar why I won't believe it until I see it, but excited to see what they're able to do. We'll always wonder, you know, if he and Pascal Siakam and Christian Coloco might have been able to do something for Cameroon's national team, but understandably, federations, things like that. There's a lot of hurdles that go to get teams to be able to compete and qualify, things like that. One team I'm excited to see potentially being able to do that is the Bahamas. You know, I think they have Eric Gordon playing, DeAndre Ayton, Buddy Hield, and Kai Jones, who signed with the Clippers for their playoff roster. So four NBA guys goes a long way. They got to qualify first. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, this is the time. It's the last go round for LeBron, I would think. I don't think he's going to try and play in the Olympics when he's 43 years old. But again, can never really count out LeBron James. But it'll probably be the first and only go-round for Steph Curry. Same for Kawhi. Probably the last go-round for Kevin Durant as well. So, you know, these guys want to go out on a high note. I think they have, you know, how the World Cup went in mind, especially against that Canadian national team, who I hope they open up, you know, their player pool a little bit and bring, you know, open mind for some guys who come in. Stinks that they can't consider Benedict Mathurin anymore due to his injury. But, you know, whether it's a guy like Shaedon Sharpe, you know, getting Wiggs back out there. I know he didn't play in the World Cup. And the big question is around Jordy Fernandez, who just took the head coaching job with the Nets. But he, you know, did a great job guiding Canada during last year's World Cup. I say all that to say it is going to be extremely exciting to see how basketball is played out at the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. I think basketball tournament starts in late July. And once we get finished talking about the NBA playoffs, the NBA finals, and the NBA draft, we'll talk about free agency. Then we'll talk about the Olympic Games. So busy, busy, busy basketball summer for us here on NBA Sound System. And we're excited to cover it all. So as I said earlier, thanks again for tuning in to the pod and subscribing wherever you get your podcast. Please share it with a friend so we can all talk about what's going on in these NBA playoffs. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you back here on NBA Sound System next week.